go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Goodness gracious, is it Titanic Tuesday already? Yes, it is. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. I'm Bob Kincaid. At HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you can find the easy, quick way to the secret trap door through to the chat room, which is as free as a bird. Jump right in, join the conversation. The room is filling up quickly. We have a lot of fun in there. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, the chat room. You'll also find a listen live button there at the homepage, and by golly, it's a great and handy way to listen unless you're on some sort of a mobile or i or smart device, in which case we recommend TuneIn Radio and or Stitcher. So there's that. Also there, PayPal button. We're so far behind now, yeah. But the PayPal button's there. It is. It really is. It is Titanic Tuesday, named for the Titanic intellect of the right wing in this country. We have many and magnificent examples of it this evening. I've got a question. And it's a fairly simple one. In light of the fact that the Supreme Court of the United States today agreed to hear questions on whether for-profit corporations have a right to claim religious exemptions from the law, in light of the fact that under Citizens United, they're people, well, now the people want to declare that they have souls to worry about. So I have a question. If it turns out that the rats plus K, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia plus Kennedy, and it's going to boil down to Kennedy, and all fat Tony Scalia has to do is put a gerbil's head in his bed, and he wets himself and does whatever fat Tony tells him to do. If we understand that the rats plus K are on the verge of declaring that corporations have souls, because really this is what this is boiling down to, isn't it? If corporations have souls, do you want one? Or do you even want to make the argument that you have one anymore? Because if corporations are going to get souls, I'm putting mine up to the highest bidder. What's the point? Really, honest to God, what is the point of having a soul if the rats plus K are gonna give them one? I've asked on a number of occasions, really, do you want to go to a heaven that has Jerry Falwell in it? Because according to the theology, he is. I think it's a fair question. Uh, It is a... had to run across the river a little bit ago. And this day here in this place is the very definition of monochromatic. Everything is in shades of gray. Rather like life. We were driving across the Newer Gorge Bridge, which if you want to go and see it on Google Earth, you'll get an idea of it. Ferg was with me, and he was absolutely transfixed. He said, "Dad, this is a really gray, dark, rainy kind of mid, but damn, that's beautiful." He was looking off to the south. Looking off to the east. Yeah, east. And there were multiple bands of fog rising. They looked like rivers in the air. There were multiple bands of whitish, whiter than the gray surrounding them, fog rising up out of the New River Gorge. And everything around it was gray, and it was raining. Man, it's really raining. When I say it's really raining, I mean it's really raining. Can you hear that? Oh, wait. Let me enhance this a hair. This is how hard it's raining. Kind of a cool rhythm, isn't it? Just give it a chance. You'll kind of get into it. Sounds like something Brian Eno or maybe David Byrne could work with. It's been pouring all day long. The streams are swollen. Kevin with a question. Bob, we have a Royal Gorge here in Colorado. Where is the one you're talking about? New River Gorge, the deepest gorge east of the Mississippi River, only about 5 miles from me, even less really. More like maybe two if you start walking. New River Gorge, Fayette County, West Virginia. The Western Hemisphere's longest single arch bridge crosses it. And at 786 feet deck height above the river, it's about 3 feet short of the height of the Eiffel Tower. And so you get this bird's eye view from the top of, from the deck of the bridge as you drive across. And it was just beautiful. Impressive, even. And moments like that make you contemplate they lead you to a contemplation of larger things. You know, it's hard to look at those bands of clouds, in just like rivers in the air running between mountains and feel like, well, we certainly are the epitome of civilization. By God, nobody else has souls, but we do. And now Hobby Lobby's about to get a soul. Because, see, they vote on these things, those nine old folks on the Supreme Court. They vote on them as to whether or not they will hear a case. So Hobby Lobby and I think 43 other cases had been filed as well, saying, "Oh, dear Jesus, if we have to pay for the contraception for the women people, Jesus won't like our souls anymore. Because it violates our religious tenets."
and they're more important than women's health. Because we've got a First Amendment and women don't have nothing.
No, they vote on this. So that means that there's already been a vote on whether or not to accept the case, and those things tend to divide along ideological lines. So either by 5-4, or 6-3, or 7-2, or 8-1, or 9-0, the court has decided to hear a complaint of a godforsaken corporation that is now a person, thank you, as to whether or not it has to provide contraception coverage on, and the argument is on a moral and not an economic one. And since it's on a moral one, it means that essentially a decision will be made as to whether or not corporations have souls. At this point in time, the American experiment in representative government is dead. Dead, 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 dead. Just like Fat Tony Scalia says the Constitution is, and he means to prove it. A note from Jude. Here in Washington State, the ongoing acquiring of hospitals by the Catholic Church is a major issue and concern. As a consequence, a bit of an action alert has been produced, warning people about it. Because, see, no matter, the Freedom from Religion Foundation has warned, as of a couple of months ago, a national state church watchdog is warning that Washingtonians are rapidly losing access to constitutionally protected forms of health care as Catholic medical organizations take over the state system. This is real. Because even if they maybe do, like, life-saving heart surgery, or maybe if they cure certain cancers and whatnot, sorry, you can't get an abortion there, and you can't get so much as a prescription for the for contraception, or even a morning after pill, or emergency contraception. Sorry, you can't get it. Jesus wants you to have that baby, no matter the circumstances. And no, I will not play Monty Python's Every Sperm is Sacred. So that's our opening question this evening on this Titanic Tuesday. If corporations are going to get souls, do you want one? Assuming you believe you have one. This case should never have, it should have been laughed out of court on its first iteration. Marty noting, if I recall Ellen Ratner's reporting correctly, if the Supremes didn't vote to hear the case, Hobby Lobby would be crowned the winner. Maybe. But that's only because they had won at an appeal level. They never should have won at the trial court level. They didn't, and they got to appeal. At some point in time, something's going to happen within our legal system to stop these shenanigans. You know, the right wing never lets up in their unending desire to limit your ability to take your civil harms into the court. They like to call it tort reform. And they laugh about a woman who got third-degree burns over her pelvic area from coffee that McDonald's had been repeatedly warned was so hot as to be dangerous. They laugh about it. Ah, see, runaway juries. Ah. The lawyer who first filed the case on behalf of Hobby Lobby should not be allowed to practice law. I'll put it that bluntly. This is that frivolous. So, if Hobby Lobby is going to get a soul, do you want one? Randy pointing out, he says, there was a Mark Twain quote, "Oh, what a hell of a heaven it's going to be when all those hypocrites get up there." No, this is not Prayer Meeting Wednesday. We got a lot of other stuff, too. A lot of other stuff. But, Lord, that pisses me off. Because, you see, I am a father of daughters of childbearing age. And if they decide that they would not prefer not to be pregnant every time an ovum enters their fallopian tubes and starts its journey south, I think they should have the right not to have to be pregnant. If they get married and decide that they'd like to put aside a little nest egg, if they don't get married and decide they'd like to put a little nest egg together before having a child, I think they should have the right to make that decision. If they decide not to have a child at all, they should have the right to make that decision. All of this is in the balance. Every last bit of it. And it's frightening. Because I fully expect... Well, consider the Civil Rights Act ruling. Consider the way Medicaid was gutted out of the Affordable Care Act. It is not... inspiring. It makes one afraid for what passes for the remainder of the Republic. I personally think it's done with. Of course, I've been arguing for years now that this is an empire and not a republic. It is certainly not a democracy, never has been, from the looks of things, never will be. My God, I even found a... News Ninja Gene sent this along to me yesterday. And I read it sort of with my mouth hanging open catching flies. I should have known, sooner or later you're going to get this. There's actually a movement of people out there with money and technical skills who think that monarchy is the way to go. They've been dubbed neo-reactionaries. They think we would be better off with kings, emperors, not just de facto, but in name. Places, the kind of folks that you have to kneel to and kiss rings and yuck. They don't like democracy. Well, there's nothing new in that. Neither did Plato. Mob rule, he thought of it. But these guys are serious. They like autocracy. They like the idea of a benign despot. You know, the classically trained philosopher king that Plato was blathering on about in the Republic. They make some compelling arguments. They've come up with a sort of concept of something called they called the cathedral, and they consider it to be a meta institution. Made up of Harvard and other Ivy League schools, the New York Times, various civil servants, one leading thinker in the group refers to it as a self-organizing consensus. and they want to go back to the days of anointed kings. The days of the unenlightenment. You know, there may be only 1,000 of these people in the United States. Maybe there's only 100. But there's enough to begin talking about this idea of we need a king. The neo-reactionaries also have a bit of an ugly racist streak. Why am I not surprised? Who was that asshat that got bounced from the Heritage Foundation who got himself a new job? The guy that wrote the... We talked about him a couple of weeks ago on the program. The guy who wrote the dissertation, that said that white folks were always going to be smarter than Hispanic folks. Best Wine or something like that. I forget his name. Well, according to this article over at TechCrunch.com, what exactly is the cathedral? Remember that's Harvard, the other Ivy League schools, the New York Times, and yada yada. What exactly is the cathedral stopping neo-reactionaries from talking about? Well, the merits of monarchy, for starters, but mostly as far as the writer can tell. Who is the writer here? Credit where credit is due, by God. The writer is Clint Finley. He said, mostly as far as I can tell, they want to be able to say stuff like, Asians, Jews, and whites are smarter than blacks, Hispanics, because genetics, without being called racists, or at least be able to express such views without the negative consequences of being labeled a racist. They hold to the notion that one's IQ, and if he is listening this evening somewhere, Dr. John is beginning to hop up and down and scream, they hold to the notion that IQ is one of the single greatest determinants of success in life. When in fact people like George W. Bush prove that wealth and privilege are. Never mind. They lump this under a concept called human biodiversity. They say that IQ is primarily genetic. And that means that all we have to do is find the smart people, give them a little genetic test, and put them in charge. And everything will be great from there. Frisbees and wheat checks for everybody. And it goes on like that. Then, okay, and this is a story. This story has a backstory to it. I've mentioned many times that my grandmother was born in 1894. Her 120th birthday will be coming up next in January. I've already got us in December. That's how bad February, November was. I got to stay out of the tequila before airtime. This note in from Jan in the UK. They can have ferret face Baldy and their sprog George. And there you have the person on the street interview from someone living under a monarchy. Well, yeah, see, Jan, future monarchies are going to be selected from the smartest people in the room. Of course, it's worth remembering that the loyal Bushies once called themselves the smartest people in the room. And how stupid can the House of Windsor be? They've got a big chunk of the wealth on earth. Oh, dear, this is not going to play out well, is it? No. No, as I was saying, my grandmother would have been 120 years ago. I promise I really wasn't into the tequila before. I wasn't. My grandmother would have been 120 years old in January of 2014. She was born in 1894. She started teaching in 1912, 101 years ago. Shortly after she began her teaching career, and she told us this story, as she got older, she told it to us repeatedly. I'm grateful for that because it stuck. 55 and a half years she taught in this county, responsible for the literacy of God knows how many people of former generations. It was, however, obviously, from time to time, a struggle. She was a one-room school teacher. That doesn't mean that she only had one room to teach in and other teachers taught in their rooms. The building had one room, and every grade was in it, from 6-year-olds to 18-year-olds. And she did the best she could. But it was 1912, and there were certain limitations culturally upon homes, and while most of the folks who were sending their children to school, public school, what a concept. Though nobody was rich, everybody tried to be clean, mostly. And so early in her teaching career, call it 1913, 100 years ago, one child kept coming to school with such a funk about him that it really was becoming deleterious to the attempts at learning by the rest of the young scholars. So my grandmother sent a note home. It said, "Please have Timmy take a bath once in a while. He stinks." And my grandmother was somebody who was raised on a farm, so she knew all the smells. She was also fairly frequently bathed, as were her other sisters and her two brothers, as did her father, my great-grandfather, and her mother, my great-grandmother. So the note comes back. "Dear Miss Goad," or maybe there wasn't even a salutation. It just said, "Timmy not stink. Timmy smell like him daddy. Old maid school teacher not know what man's supposed to smell like." So Timmy continued not to bathe. Now, I mention this story because I've got something contemporary along those lines. This is not elitism. The question is, what do you do when you've got a kid who is keeping the rest of the room from learning because they can't stand to be in the same... And, you know, let's say it's January in 1913... the little clabbered one-room schoolhouse is shut up as tight as it can be. There's a Franklin or a coal-burning stove in the back of the room going full blast trying to keep the place warm. It can the environment can get unpleasant in a hurry. Ever been on an airplane with an unbathed? Greyhound bus? Ever read Mark Twain's The Invalid's Tale? So what's a teacher to do? Well, in 1913 or so, my grandmother sent a note home saying, "Please give Timmy a bath once in a while so the rest of us can go on learning." The more indirect and, I suppose, more democratic approach would be to send a letter home to everybody. That's what happened at a school in Buffalo. The story is being reported by a Fox affiliate, so you may take that with a grain of salt. But I see nothing here to tip me off that this is totally made up. And again, just another day in the Republic. The note was handwritten by the teacher and sent to every parent. Urgent notice. Please read. Several children in pre-K, ages 3 to 4, are coming to school sometimes daily with soiled, stained, or dirty clothes. Some give off unpleasant smells, and some appear unclean and unkempt. I think the teacher meant unkempt, but we'll leave the red pencil alone for now. Parents, please take care of this matter. It is a health and safety concern. It also makes it difficult for me to be close to them or even to want to touch them. Enough said. Please sign and return so I know you've read this. I have read the notice, blank parent, blank child. Parents are calling for this teacher to be fired. Again, if I'm coming across elitist, I apologize. And I recognize that humanity is humanity. Sharon Perry Dunnigan is the teacher at Build Academy Kindergarten. One student's grandmother said of the note that she received, "Sit down, duct tape, tennis ball. She could have wrote it better. You know, to tell someone in a letter you can't even get close to their child because of the smell, then how are you going to teach them?" That was Kimberly Wells, a student's grandmother. She could have wrote it better. I'm a snob. Texas Betsy says, "I give kids soap in an unobtrusive way, anonymously if possible." That's going to be kind of tough with the 3- and 4-year-olds. Truly. I think it's important that we always demonstrate respect for all of our children and for all of our families. Is that what this is? Disrespect? And sometimes I feel like I don't even properly understand English anymore. All those years of working on the art of knowing words just went right down the drain. Some felt Fox News style manual alert. Some felt the letter was inappropriate and called for the teacher to face consequences, Fox8.com reported. A little help here? Some what? Some parents? Some school administrators? Some citizens of the planet Norblap 12? Some randomly passing by amoebae? Some banana slugs? Some guinea worms? Some felt the letter was inappropriate. and called for the teacher to face consequences. Now, that last, that clause, that phrase there, called for the teacher to face consequences. Firing squad? What? Does consequences mean? She's going to be told to come to school with a clothespin on her nose? Rub some Vicks vapor rub underneath her nose, like maybe she's getting ready to do a post-mortem? And I'm sure out in some right-wing circle, this is proof that government schools is a failure. And see, that's what you get with your Common Core. Your Common Core is going to start insisting that people bathe the way that one in our White House wants them bathed. And then they can go to the government schools and get re-educated so that they can sign up for communism care. That guy will probably be down at the end of some of your Thanksgiving Day dinner tables. Called for her to face consequences. I guess by that we mean she's going to get canned, or they want her to get canned, for daring to say that their precious little lumpkins not smell so good. Timmy not stink. Timmy smell like him daddy. Timmy daddy smell like man. Old maid school teacher not know what man smell like. Your thoughts? You're welcome to share them. Yeah, see, that's some Fox reporters. Thank you, Texas Betsy. Ah, I see. Texas Betsy says, no, put a bar of soap in the backpack and toothpaste and a toothbrush. From Sandra, stop, Bob. Can't breathe. It's a true story. Old maid school teacher not know what man smell like. But seriously, I know that we've got several teachers in the audience, in the Horn family. What do you do? And this is not to say that everybody has to bathe every day. I know there are people who are conscious of water usage. But is there no remedy to this? Jim with a note. Cleanliness. Hell, they need to listen to Red Fox's diatribe. Wash your ass. I just can't see saying that to a 3-year-old, but well. But I mean there are things at work here. I think I've mentioned in the past, my grandfather would come home from the coal mines, and he would always bathe. He would go to the coal mines in his street clothes, go to the bathhouse, change into his work clothes, and go and work his shift. Come out of the bathhouse, hit the shower, scrub all the coal filth off of him, wrap up his work clothes. After, you know, a couple of days or whatever, I'm not sure what the schedule was, put his street clothes back on and go home to my grandmother. He would no sooner have come off of that mine site, because it's a filthy business, especially like back then, it's still filthy today. He would no sooner have come off of that mine site dirty than he would have, I don't know, gone to church that way. He would no sooner track filth into his wife's house that she worked like a dog to keep clean, then he would have... Well, you get the idea. That's gone. Coal workers now routinely come off the mountaintop removal site extra filthy. And then they go to the store extra filthy, and they go parading around, you know, because that shows that they're a hard-working friend of coal. You've heard him on the announce portions here. Haven't run him in a while. Got to recut him. But my buddy Brian Reznor, in addition to being a wonderful voice talent, he's also a hell of a DJ, and he DJs in clubs. And he has told me stories of seeing the coal workers come into clubs in their filthy coal mine clothes because being stinking and filthy is deemed an aphrodisiac. Kid you not. Texas Betsy tells me the problem is that she said she didn't want to touch the kids. She should have left that part out. Was that dishonest? I mean, if a child is sent to school day after day after day after day filthy, what are the chances that the kid's bringing, you know, some friends with him? Mice. Bedbugs. Who knows? Please. And I'm sorry, I can't get my head around this. Agnes would know soon, and you know, we are far, and I do mean far, from wealthy. Need I remind? Far from it. But Agnes would no sooner have sent one of our babies to school dirty than she would have... I don't get it. And yet the parents are upset. Look, if you're bathing your kids, don't get upset about the letter. If you're not, then I think your anger is a little bit misplaced. Of course, again, a country that has something approaching the closest you can get to academic riots over the Common Core standards, I guess this is to be expected, isn't it? I agree, Betsy, she should not be fired. On the other hand, however, I don't think she should be disciplined at all. I think the principal should stand up behind her and say, no, really, wash your kid. I would say, Betsy says, but did the parents know it went to the whole class? The note is handwritten, but it says, several children in pre-K ages 3 to 4 are coming to school, sometimes daily, with soiled, stained, or dirty clothes. That sort of tells you that everybody got the note. And then, remember, Granny said that she could have wrote it better. Listen, if I'm an elitist snob, tell me. If I'm getting this wrong, tell me. I get the nuance that Betsy is alluding to. But
don't at age 3 to 4, don't you really want to inculcate some ideas of hygiene? Hygiene. Brushing teeth, washing hands. It's a public school, for God's sakes. It is, by definition, just because of how things are. It's a viral swimming pool. I mean, we want a little hand washing going on so that all the precious pumpkins don't come down with dengue fever or something. Or bird flu, or chicken. You know. Oh, dear. Note coming in from Sergi. Subject line, smelliness. Hey. Sergi writes, as far as being smelly, being an aphrodisiac, some homies are the same way. Some of us get turned on by a day or two or three's worth of body odor. But over 3 days, and it goes from aphrodisiac to take a damn shower. Betsy says, fire the granny, by all means. No, don't fire her. Send her to some adult basic literacy classes so that she won't grow up teaching her grandchild that the participial form of take one of them is tooken. Okay, here's a new draft of the letter. Dear parents, next week in pre-K, each child will keep a calendar of how often they do the following. Sleep, take a bath, play with Legos, brush their teeth. That's the reason Betsy is the education pro that she is. I suspect that our pre-K teacher up in Buffalo probably wasn't that sharp. Or maybe had just had enough of the smell. Jim with a question. Bathing, period. Ever wash a 29-pound cat to get rid of his fellow travelers? You do not wish this upon anyone. I still have the scratches. I gotta think that washing bathing a 3 or 4 year old pre-K student is actually easier than bathing a 29-pound cat. I mean, we're little humans. We evolved from water creatures, for God's sakes. We love the water. That's why we like to go to the beach. There's your rubber duck. Have a blast. Scrub, scrub, scrub. Make little fun hats and stuff with Mr. Bubble. And but you know what? Water bills are not cheap. I know this, for I have paid them. And well, we used to refer to, Agnes and I used to sit down, in those Mike and Carol Brady end-of-the-day conversations. No, that's true. That's what I'm getting at. What if they're living in their car? What if they don't have a bathtub? Absolutely. Then I don't think Granny sends the letter saying you could have wrote it better. And yes, my privilege is shining. Come on, Bob, you're more sensitive than this, Betsy says. I am sensitive to all those things. Jude asking, how many of these children are living in cars or in the streets due to homelessness? But always the first thought must be is, where are they living and are they safe? Yes. Absolutely. Because of the damages caused by the storm of a year and a half back, we bathe similarly to how my grandmother did 100 years ago. We heat water on the stove and carry it pot by pot. where there's no soak in the tub. There's a wash rag and there's a soap and there's a pot of hot water. Maybe that's why my sensitivity seems impaired. Smelly clothes. No washing machine. Yeah, this is a learning curve for me. This is a privilege check-in. We have a bathtub to pour the water from the stove in. Welcome to America. And that's not, you know, that's not a pity party. That's reality. That's part of being not part of the privileged class. The derecho took out the roof, the water heater, parts of the stove, the refrigerator. A hard winter wrecked some of the plumbing. But I'm not about to sit here and tell you I got it hard. Because there are people trying to figure out how not to stink while living in cars, or for whom body odor is less of a concern than feeding those little bodies. Seems to me there's a teachable moment on both sides here. Seems to me that maybe if we give a damn about the child, we'll find out what the circumstances of the child are. If we give a damn about the family, we'll see what that family's circumstances are. And maybe there'll be some time for teaching the teacher. It's a pity that somebody like Betsy can't reach out and show how to do this thing without getting a bunch of parents all riled up. Let's, at 7 minutes before the hour. Oh, wait a minute. One more school story. This one isn't quite as nuanced, and I don't think I'm going to get myself in a corner the way I did with that one. This story comes out of Canada. And again, it's a school story. And they have promulgated standards up there for nutrition of children. And it has been determined that a child at a meal needs one milk, one meat, one grain, and two fruits or vegetables, and the vegans and the vegetarians can go pound sand. You notice the one meat and the one milk there. So, in Manitoba, at the Early Learning and Child Care Department, they try to encourage a balanced meal for school children. Hence the aforementioned one milk, one meat, one grain, and two fruits or vegetables. So, a mommy, we'll just call her a mommy, packs a lunch for her two little kids. She sent a lunch of roast beef and vegetables and fruit and milk. But she left out the grains. Natalie and Logan's mommy got a note home. Name, Natalie and Logan. Lunchbox supplement note. Today, your child's lunch was supplemented with Ritz crackers. Meals that are provided to children by either the center or parent are required to have one milk, one meat, one grain, and two fruits, vegetables. According to licensing guidelines, the center is required to supplement lunches that contain anything less than this. Today, you were missing grain. The lunch had meat, potatoes, milk, carrots, and an orange. Your account will be charged $10 Canadian. $5 apiece for the Ritz crackers that they put in Natalie and Logan's lunch. Ritz crackers. The folks with the story here noted that the mama could have sent her kids to daycare with microwave craft dinner and a hot dog, a package of fruit twists, a cheese string, and a juice box, and it would have been met with approval. On the other hand, there are 6.5 grams of fat in 10 Ritz crackers. Of those 6.5 grams, nearly 50% are saturated fats. $5 apiece for 20 or for 10 Ritz crackers. Charming. And this is what gives. Yeah, see, well, I guess they're just not allowed in Manitoba, Betsy. Regarding this story, what about a kosher child who doesn't eat meat and milk at the same meal? Or a Buddhist or a Hindu child? Pound sand. And this is what gives the right wing fodder for saying that government schools are a failure. Government schools, they call them. We like to call them public schools because we're trying to afford everybody an education. Right, exactly. Marty noting an entire box of Ritz crackers is what, $4, $5? Granted, that's U.S. dollars, but no, we're pretty close with the Canadian dollar these days. Looney has it from time to time been more highly valued than the American dollar. Has that come back to parity? So you see the silliness of it. I shared that story with Agnes. Well, Agnes was often running on that one. Why the? I would have. Oh. Yeah. But then again, that calls to mind the time that I got up early in the morning, I did. Got up early in the morning and made homemade sushi for Margaret, Ferg, and Doodle. And I think Laura too. And took it to school, kept it cold so everything would be good, and took it to school to them for their lunch period, at which point the teacher made them throw their sushi away because the children loved the sushi, but the teacher said, "That is disgusting. Don't you ever let me catch you bringing that in here again. Tell your daddy that is not allowed." Eesh. Tuna, avocado, some rice, some seaweed, some soy sauce. Because it's not allowed. Eh, you'll have that sort of thing. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Why always me?
I guess that's just how it works out.
Yeah, I'd rather listen to Jim for a few minutes, have something worthwhile as far as beside you to comment on, you know.
Well, I don't think I'm very worthwhile this evening.
Well, you kind of, once again, Bob, you kind of hit home to me being an old fart and living and going to school in a neighborhood where a lot of the kids were straight out of the, like we had a couple of Puerto Rican kids right off the island. And a lot of folks from down south who maybe hadn't got, you know, I mean, I don't know, but it, there was some head lice problems. But, of course, growing university graduates of England, France, Germany, and the U.S. had those on the Western Front, didn't they? So, stuff happens. And a building that I live in now that's full of nice old Eastern Europeans, there's something around. I haven't seen them yet. I haven't dealt with the problem yet. Something my mother used to tell me at night in 1948-49, dogs and bed bugs bite. I had to ask her what the hell they were. And she said,
"You don't have to ask anymore, Bill. They're rampant across the country."
Have you seen any concepts of what the hell is going on?
This, you know, not by, you know, it's all these disaster movies feature things like, you know, the Washington Monument falling down or something like that.
Yeah.
Those are not the disasters that bring down a culture.
Yep.
It's things like the return of bedbugs.
Yeah, like where the hell are they coming from? I mean, a lot of people tell me, well, a buddy of mine who's had a nice job and his folks are in their 90s, but his mother liked to buy stuff at garage sales. You know, sheets, blankets. And, of course, that's can be an open invitation to stuff like that. But I've never heard. I haven't, you know me, Bob. I have this problem. I hear about something, and you'd like to know why. Where is it coming from? What's going on? Because this is not something new. We never saw them when I was a kid, but, and God knows I slept in some strange motels.
Dodgy places?
The No-Tel Motel was one of my favorite places, you know. They used to leave, you know, letterhead around, and No-Tel Motel, a little peace and quiet was the logo on the thing, you know.
Yeah.
I'm exaggerating, of course. And hell, I would go to big places to fish constantly. Every year I'd be up in Rice Lake. We went to the same place all the time. Chautauqua, most of the time we went to the same place. And there was no problems. I just don't know what. Now, this teacher situation, we did have some kids that parents could have been working pretty hard and... Hell, I used to, Bob, I was a 2-shower-a-day guy in my prime. Because, you know, you go out and work on your house or your car or something, and, well, you came in from there, and I had a shower in the garage area so that I wouldn't...
Track it into the house.
Yeah, well, we had got lucky that year and put in, when the bathroom was redone, I put in a nice whirlpool tub that I got cheap because the guy who ordered it didn't like the color. So the guy at the plumbing supply house says, man, I'm stuck with this damn thing. And the price was pretty good, and it worked real fine. But so I didn't want to get those things covered with grease, you know, being that little nicer guy. And I just don't know. Does this mirror the king society?
I'm sorry, you dropped out there. Is this near what?
Does this mirror the rest of our freaking society?
Look, you know, it's a story here and a story there, and I guess we can comfort ourselves, Bill, by saying, well, you know, that's you know, one little one-off somewhere.
Yeah.
But generally, I mean, what are the statistical odds of, I mean, this is America, as everybody pointed out. There's lots of children trying to go to school who are spending the night in automobiles.
Yes.
Because
that's where I was.
You know, because you know, the free market is the greatest thing that's ever happened to the humankind.
Well, there's a fellow whose name I won't mention, but you know him and I know him, and he's not one of the Horn family per se, but off the air, I tell you who it was, a guy who spent a lot of time sleeping in cars with his family when things were bad. Well, I passed out on a few, but that's different, you know. It wasn't quite the same thing. Now, I exaggerate. I have to give myself the Phil Harris, Frankly Rumley identification. Yeah, the guy's a drunk. That was a funny part of it. For a musician, I wasn't, but I mean, I never drank when I wasn't working. I had a kind of a job where they encouraged you to drink while you were working, which is rather unusual, is it not? You know, I mean,
right. Yeah.
Most of your employers didn't like it when you weren't when you were loaded. But the more loaded I got, the more booze I was moving for them. A lot of my buddies and I used to make fun of ourselves, describing ourselves as harmonic beer salesmen or whatever, you know, musical beer salesmen.
Yeah.
Because that's what our job was. I used that all. More you drink, the better we sound line until people were sick of it.
Or soused of it.
What?
Or soused from it.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, that's... I can't repeat some of the... Well, some woman took a romantic interest in me at closing time and thought that the bar ladies' room was the bridal suite. And I had to refuse that one. I didn't think that was the right way to go. And, yeesh. Excuse me, I've got to go get deloused or something, you know. But is this? I think it's a lot of it's part of the economic situation.
Right, because this country has given up, Bill, on the notion that, and you know this is not rocket science. These are ideas that have been promulgated in the past that have been rejected by the conservatives and the libertarians and the John Birchers and the Deathers and the Birthers and the Booger Eaters and, you know, the Republicans.
Yeah.
They reject the idea that a society is best that takes care of as many as it possibly can. That there is a certain minimum standard of existence below which it would be immoral, unethical, and embarrassing for the United States to let people fall. Now,
somebody's hammering at me tonight, mate.
Now, I mean, granted, I think these ideas still hold force in places like, oddly enough, where the United States has picked up the pieces.
Yeah.
Europe, Japan.
Yeah.
Places where ideas of liberality, quote unquote, have still got some little bit of a fix in the ground, you know. Australia, New Zealand, and you know what? The funny thing is, there are countries that do not have the wherewithal to do these sorts of things that would give anything to be able to.
This when the World War II ended, all of a sudden buildings didn't blow themselves back into shape from rubble, and food didn't crop up out of the ground, and people had everything they had in 1938 back to normal again. It was pretty tough over there.
Yeah.
And we forget how. I've read a couple studies of the after war mishmash, and it was pretty rough. It was pretty terrible. The Mafia got a round of applause for battling it out with the Germans in Naples. I got to give them credit for that. Come on, you're cutting into our business here. Get out of town.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way that goes. Yeah, I just don't know what to say because it is tough on a teacher. Because they have, it's got to hurt them to see this stuff, too.
Sure. I guess depending on which, you know, which way the wind's blowing or which way you view a story like this, it would be real easy to jump in there on the side of the teachers or on the side of the parents and say, she should face consequences. But for what? I don't know if she's a young teacher or an older teacher. We don't know that. But I think we had a patent example. How it could be done the way Betsy laid it out there. That's just sharp.
I had one second grade teacher who was a good teacher, and she had quite a few years in the business. And occasionally after lunch, she had an odor that at that age I could only, it smelled a little bit like aftershave lotion or parts of aftershave lotion, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Yeah, a little bit of booze, you know. Of course, I think if I had to put up with some of the classes that went through her room, I'd be, I'd be loaded too. I had one history teacher call me an occupational hazard because I asked him questions that he didn't want to answer. That was a problem. But it's a sad thing. It's just another example of how the country, the middle class, is taking a slide again. Or the parents may have problems along the lines. I mean, there's more drug usage and stuff that I saw plenty of in the 60s and 70s, but it was people in their teens and 20s that were smoking this and drinking that. But sometimes the folks are too far gone. And for God's sake, Bob, they could be working two jobs, and that's not helping.
Well, remember, Dim Leader said that working three jobs is uniquely American.
Yeah.
Now, let's say you are working three jobs. Who's going to make sure that the precious pumpkin gets his or her bath, assuming you have a tub to put him in?
Yeah, that's what they...
I mean, under the best of worst of circumstances, you'd say, well, you know, wipe him down with some baby wipes, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
What if the child only has one set of clothes? I know that seems alien to us in an age, Bill, when, you know, everybody goes to Walmart.
Yeah.
But you know what? I've remarked in the past that this falling down house we live in here has no closets.
Yeah.
And my grandmother built armoires.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, they were not particularly big. We still got them, but they were large enough to hold one's wardrobe.
Yeah. And the dampness in the house too is not helping any because you don't have you're not using a full gas furnace or anything, are you?
Oh, no. The HVAC cronked out years ago.
Oh, those things, yeah. Well, when I was...
Yeah, it was a heat pump, and the last thing to go was the coil, and, you know, when that thing would kick on, you could just go outside and watch the electric meter spin like a carnival pinwheel.
Absolutely.
But, this is not... I'm not going for a wallow here, because we have it far better than a hell of a lot of folks.
Well, I was living with this friend of mine downtown after I got the hell out of my house in Lake County, and I had quite a few kerosene heaters that mounted right on the 5-gallon tank. And they were handy, except I was always afraid that I was going to take a trip to Mars, you know.
Right.
Or Venus or whatever when that thing would explode. Because that's, with my luck, you know. With my luck, I didn't have it threaded on well enough.
There you go.
Use those inside anyhow. But it's probably a lot worse than we even know as far as poverty. And, I'm getting a taste of this social system. Bob, I moved myself 11 or 12 times in my life. But at the age now and with the eyes, it's a pain in the ass. And I'm not getting much help from people. When they were telling me, well, you ought to get rid of a lot of that stuff. Yeah, I have a nice down jacket and a leather jacket that I bought years ago and they still fit. I should go get rid of it, yeah. Why don't you just become an old fart and sit around in your bathrobe, you know? Because, Bob, the more you do that shit, the less living you do, the older you get, the faster.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen that or not, but that's what happens. And, man, my brains won't let me shut down that way anymore. I'm delighted about one thing. On Thanksgiving, I'm going to have dinner with a good friend.
Yeah, we've been reading about that in the chat room.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of excitement.
Well, this family is one of the best. I mean, everybody I've talked to in any depth has turned about to be the best. And the young gentleman with the truck, and if he moves stuff, I'd like to speak with him. And there's ways...
I sent you his contact info, right?
Yeah, but I have problems with that stuff. The other people have my phone number. I would give it out, but with my luck, there's got to be somebody listening to the show who's selling magazines, and they'd be the first one to call me. But,
Well, I've got it. If you want me to, I'll turn it around to him.
Well, if you can, yeah, because, I just talked to one of my buddies. I'm trying to get my computers the hell out of here just in case some clowns come in to move, you know? Because we used to have an expression about what some of these people could do to a free meal, some people. That's why I like to find somebody who doesn't. You've heard the expression.
Yes.
And unfortunately, those are the things you never forget in this world. But as I say, I don't know, the teacher, I can understand her doing those things, but I don't know, maybe at a parent-teacher meeting, she might be able to quietly speak to the parent. Like you say, Bob, I never had the pleasure of, I slept in a camper quite a bit, but that was a little different.
You meant to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If it's snowing, why drive home in freshly fallen snow? Because they don't start moving that stuff on a Sunday morning.
No, and we're waiting for the crap to hit now, and it's done nothing but rain for 24 solid hours.
Well, I think we're going to escape the heavy snow up here.
You know, I'm looking at something here because I mentioned before, Bill, I get a plum ton of emails every day. So, you know, the newly elected governor of Virginia is Mark Warner.
Yeah, well.
Oh, they're still fundraising, or they're still using their email list to, no, not newly elected. No, he's the senator. He's Senator Mark Warner.
Yeah.
What am I thinking? What's his name? McAuliffe is the newly elected governor.
Yeah,
but so I get this blast email.
Kennedy, yeah. I mean,
tell Congress, okay, and you know, as liberals and progressives, we can get behind this notion. Mark Warner, U.S. Senator, tell Congress, fix our bridges and roads. And just based on the conversation we're having, my first thought is, you know what? Tell Congress to fully fund SNAP. Tell Congress to make sure that children can have a damn bath before they go to school. Tell Congress to make sure that no child goes to sleep homeless tonight. I mean, we've got there are so many things we. This country is in a place, Bill, where we are actually having to do triage on it. You know what I mean? It's where you walk through and there's so many wounded people and you're going, okay, this guy's not as bad as this guy. That guy's awful. Get him to the operating room stat. Bandage this guy up. This guy can wait. On and on and on. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
This country is in that state. Yeah, we need to fix our bridges and roads. But you know what good are bridges? What good are bridges and roads if they don't lead to people's homes?
Yep. See, I don't know about the third world, but I sure believe that we're at least at 2.25. in some respects. And I hear these people on these college talk shows, and I'd like to crawl through and just choke them to death. Oh, they're talking about the gold standard and all that stuff, and I don't know if they know what's going on around them, whether they see it or not. But I see it. It's and you know, I'm on the front edge of the baby boomers. I'm not really a boomer. But what's going to happen when those people start retiring en masse?
Well, I mean, they already are. It's kind of odd. My eldest sister is the front end of the baby boom, and oddly enough, I'm the tail end of the baby boom. So she just turned 67 and refuses to retire. I don't know if she refuses it. Well, I think she loves her work. Me, you know, I'm now coming up on 51.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've already had my screwing by virtue of what they've already done to Social Security.
Yep.
Okay. And if the Republicans get their way, or for that matter, if Barack Obama gets his way, and he gets his chain CPI and his grand bargain, Jesus, who knows how long? I mean, I don't know. And see, that's the nice thing, or well, you know, if you're one of those people with all the money, that's the nice thing. We've got the people who are younger than me busting their ass so hard just to get by from day to day to day. They seldom have time to sit down and look out and go, "Oh man, it's ugly on the road."
Yeah.
And so they'll just sit there and work and work and work, and retirement's a damn dream. My father became disabled before he got to retirement age.
Happened to me too, yeah.
You know, years and years and years of working around asbestos steam lines and toxic fumes coming off of a furnace and that kind of stuff took a toll.
Yeah.
And so he didn't get to retirement, and he had to sue Reynolds Metals Company in order to get the pension that he had damned well paid for, that he had deferred compensation into. He had to sue for it. He was in management, and his immediate supervisor said, "Well, why don't you just go get you a job down to a gas station?"
Yeah, easy. Yeah, easy job when you're sick.
But his generation had the promise that was given to them when they were children during the Depression of Social Security. And they had the promise that was made to them when they were in the prime of their working lives of Medicare.
Yeah.
And we have an element in this country who are hell-bent on breaking those promises.
Yeah, it scares me because, well, I don't feel I'm going to hang around too long because I never took good care of myself. Who did?
I'll never. It was toward the end of his life. We were at his regular treating physician, his ordinary everyday doctor down in Alabama, and Dad was having he was having pain in his hip. It was related to circulation. I think some neuropathy related to his diabetes, things like that. And you've got this youngish doctor who looks at him and says, "Well, sir, you haven't been very kind to your body over the years, have you?"
Yeah, called working, yeah.
And my dad got up off of the table.
Ooh.
And he looked at him and he said, "If I was a little younger, I would beat your ass black and blue."
Good for him. My kind of guy.
"How dare you? All I did was work all my life, and you tell me I haven't been good to my body?"
Yeah, well, this punk that came up here from the rental agency, I felt like asking the custodian to get his ass out in the hallway. Because I don't think this boy could have handled me at my age, because you never know what I would have hit him with. Because it's just the way it is. They insult the hell out of you.
And see, Jeremy up in Vermont is considerably younger than I do believe. And he says, "I'm one of those people who doesn't look to retirement as anything as being anything for me." And see, this should scare people like me and people like Jeremy and others like us, should scare the daylights out of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Not because I'm going to run off and vote Republican, but because I don't think that the Democrats fully understand the degree to which people like Jeremy and me are pretty sure that they're willing to cave in. Irish Dave with a question. He says, was it UB Blake that said, if I had known I would live this long, I would have taken better care of myself? I thought that was Mickey Mantle.
I think it might have been Mantle. UB Blake was a pretty damn good piano player, ragtime player, if I'm familiar. Is that who you?
Oh, yeah, lived to be 100, something like that.
Yeah, musicians, they stick in your mind. And that's what kind of bothers me sometimes, is trying to remember the name of somebody I knew real well, and I was all of a sudden, what the hell was their name anyhow? So maybe, I think I took a hit putting that fire out here, the smoke. My eyes seem to have gotten blasted a little bit. But hell, I call my doctor, who was a friend of mine and who I used to play music for parties at his house. But now that he's part of one of the bigger medical things, he can't take 5 minutes and, you know, off the clock and talk to me anymore. A guy who would eat up every one of my breaks sitting there talking to me. And we enjoyed talking to each other about world situations.
Well, yeah, but his time was more important than your time.
Now it is, yeah. But I'll tell you, I saw a lot of people in the projects who were on Social Security in the early 50s. And it was a shitbox, Bob. It was not good money.
No.
What was the gross? Between 39 and 50, you know?
Right.
Between the influx of it. And
think about the people who couldn't get it.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing. My accountant was pretty generous to me when I was working in music. You know, those accountants that, can be very... I could deduct tuxedos and such, you know? It was part of the law.
Yeah. Cost of doing business, wasn't it?
Yep, it sure was, and it doesn't help you. But anyway, I'll let you go, but this is a problem that I saw with kids in grade school, and I don't know. I tend to think it's sometimes the parents aren't after... You know how kids are, take a bath? Well, if you can... Hell, I'm not what I used to be. I would... Two baths a day were not uncommon with me.
Well, that's what I was going to say earlier. At one point in time, Agnes and I, during our Mike and Carol Brady portion of the evening, right before lights out, had ourselves pretty well convinced that somewhere in the process, our son had I don't know if he was genetically modified or came from a Monsanto lab or what, but we were pretty well convinced that some portion of him was Labrador Retriever.
You like the water, huh?
Oh, 2-3 baths a day.
Oh, yeah.
And who's going to argue?
No, you know. You guys were running well water, weren't you?
No. Well, we used to, but it became toxic, so we went with the so-called city water. We had a public service district that was financed, the extension of which was financed by the federal government, y'all, taxpayers. And it was promptly sold to West Virginia American Water Company, which is owned by American Water Company, which was owned by a London holding company, which was owned by one of Germany's worst polluters.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's the occasional allegation that American Water Company's all mobbed up.
Well, a couple of my uncles lived in rural areas, and we'd go visit them and stay overnight. And I'd stay with my mom's brother was a guy who... They lost a son. They lost what would have been my cousin to the blue baby syndrome. And after he died, I became the apple of my aunt and uncle's eye, because I was the only male in the family, And my uncle, man, he was you talk about movies. He was a movie buff from the angle of who owned the studios. He knew all that stuff like it was, as well as the actors, He knew the business aspect of the early days of the movie business. And, he taught me how to paint cars and every other damn thing that I asked him to teach me, he taught me. And that's another thing that we don't get anymore with the family spread from here to hell.
No.
That's a problem, too. And I think the how our structure, like, the weaker our families are, the more the power boys like it.
Oh, sure. If you go back, and we've talked about this in the past, if you go back and you read Joe Bajant's Rainbow Pie,
yep,
you will see him very patiently explaining why the extended American family had to be broken up in the name of capitalism and in the name of the greater good of the constant consumerist society. So that one of, you know, and that's one of the things that puts the lie to this notion that the right wing somehow cares about family values. They don't. We had extended families up in large part in this country. There were extended families all over this country up until the end of the Second World War.
Yep.
And then they were driven into the stream of commerce so that they could go and live in little prefab neighborhoods to go and work at the factories and go, and for some it represented greater opportunity, but for others and for many it represented the absolute destruction of the family unit.
Yeah. I mean, I was proud of the fact that my family aunt, the man she married, was an iron worker, and he traveled the country with a trailer and a Scotty dog and her, and he worked the Golden Gate, worked the Huey Long. But that was Depression era. He was a riveter, this guy.
Yeah.
Of course, he got so...
Well, when I was up in northern Wisconsin, I spent a little time just talking to a guy. I do that. I just talk to people randomly.
Oh, yeah. I saw
And he was telling me he was an iron worker. And, you know, he had 40 acres on the Bad River Reservation. He was a member of the tribe. He is a member of the tribe. But he went all over the country doing, you know, high in the sky iron work.
Yep. Well, most of the iron workers that I saw working in University Circle in the 60s were Native Americans. I don't know whether they had enough courage to climb on that high steel. I mean, of course, I would see them have lunch, and I wondered, man, I don't know if I could walk on the sidewalk. You know, after what they had for lunch. But, man, these guys were fantastically gifted at high steel. They were, I mean, to this day, I marvel how the hell a man climbs up on that. Man, I'd get halfway up in the elevator and say I quit. Let me go back here to this, running this. Another big thing when I was a kid was these bicycle-powered ice cream sales trucks. You know, the old...
Oh, yeah, the Good Humor kind of...
Good Humor guy, yeah. Well, most of the time, they didn't fit the description of Good Humor, but most of the time, they were pretty angry because they weren't making any money. And then all of a sudden, in the 70s, street hot dog vendors showed up all over the place. Never saw one in my life in the city until then. And, you know, I was around the city. I lived close to it. And spent a lot of time walking around it when I was a kid because it was just, you know, it was not the city it is now. Guys who died would not recognize most of these areas anymore from the time I was a little kid. Because one thing you always knew in the 50s, where to go and get some men who could shine those shoes, those Stetsons and those other pointed toe dress shoes and make them look good for you. And then you learned from watching them. Of course, and the guys that went in the service, they came out knowing the same thing. You know, the old Kiwi water shine deal. And anyhow, that's another story. I can wander on a tangent sometime, but anyhow, I appreciate it. But it's a toughie because the kids probably aren't getting the attention they deserve. And why? Why? What's going on behind... in the home? Are the parents working like such dogs that they, you know, aren't around? That was a big screamer that was going on in the 50s was latchkey kids. I mean, I heard...
Oh, I thought that was a big deal in the 80s.
I was in the 50s. It was 50s, 60s. Wherever mom was working and the old boy was working and kid came home and got into school and... Thank God for American Bandstand, because most of us went as home as fast as we could to sit there and and drool over the dancers on the show, you know.
It's got a, yeah, it's got a great beat, and you can dance to it.
Yeah, and you can sit here and look at these women that from South Philly, which was, you know, the big hairdos and...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was a time and a place, Bob, like everything else, clothing-wise. It's the time and the place changes. I don't know what... You know, I never wore chinos or Madras shirts, though, so I'm proud of that yet. Anyhow, you take care.
All right, Bill, you have a good evening.
Good night.
Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, from Cleveland. A couple of updates before we go back to the phones. 304-658-3333 is the number if you want to jump into the queue. A couple of updates from last night. The story last night we had coming out of Nash Vegas about Wayne Mills, country singer, who was gunned down in a bar called the Pit and Barrel there in Nashville for the apparently summary executable offense of smoking a cigarette. A little more information developing about the Pit and Barrel and the proprietor thereof. Apparently... the owner of the Pit and Barrel, well, the Pit and Barrel hasn't always been the Pit and Barrel. It had been known as something else. Boondocks. B-O-O-N-D-O-X, capital X, is what it was before it was turned into the Pit and Barrel. It was turned into the Pit and Barrel because it was featured as on the reality TV show on Spike TV called Bar Rescue, in which bars get redone and I guess bar owners become some sort of Andy Warhol-esque celebrities for their 15 minutes of fame. And the owner of the bar, apparently, in the episode about the bar, was a genuine horse's ass who was constantly screaming at people who worked there. By the way, he posted a sign on his bar there at the Pit and Barrel, red outline on white paper with a semi-automatic, with the silhouette of a semi-automatic pistol in a big red circle that said, "Guns are welcome on premises." Because, you know, you never know when you're going to have to protect your freedom when you're sitting there slurping down a Jack and Coke. Here's an interesting detail. The guy, Chris Farrell, has claimed his Stand Your Ground rights. Mm-hmm. And no arrests have been made, no charges filed. Because on the one hand, Tennessee allows guns in bars, and Tennessee has a Stand Your Ground law. Here's what's interesting, however. According to witnesses, the victim, Wayne Mills, who was intoxicated, lit up a cigarette in the non-smoking, because you can bring your gun but not your cigarettes to the Pit and Barrel, lit up a cigarette in the non-smoking portion of the bar at which Chris Farrell, who was a buddy of his, who was also drunk out of his mind, became enraged. And it developed rather quickly, and like something out of, I guess, a bad Western, the place just cleared out. You can read about this over at Americans Against the Tea Party. Place cleared out, then gunfire, then Wayne Mills is dead on the ground, with Chris Farrell having stood his ground and shot Wayne Mills in the back of the head. So, standing your ground now appears to include shooting someone in the back of the head, you know, execution style. And speaking of shooting people and stand your ground, last night we also had the story from the Christian American Patriots Militia. Remember, these are the clowns who said that they now had authority to assassinate the President of the United States. Remember that story? Sure. Well, this story isn't about them. This story is about a well-known and, I guess by some people, respected conservative thinker by the name of Dinesh D'Souza. He's a pal of anthrax culters, etc., etc. So on his Twitter feed today, he decided to announce what he was thankful for, what with this being Thanksgiving coming up. Here is what Dinesh D'Souza tweeted. I am thankful this week when I remember that America is big enough and great enough to survive grown-up Trayvon in the White House. I mention this only because we had rather of an extended discussion about concepts of liability and concepts of liability as they attach to people who incite other people to do horrible, horrible, horrible things. The word Trayvon now has its own universe of reality. The word, the name Trayvon, now has its own universe of meaning in this country. So when Dinesh D'Souza says, I'm thankful this week when I remember that America is big enough and great enough to survive grown-up Trayvon in the White House, well, you know, Zim survived Trayvon too, if you know what I mean. Trayvon didn't survive Zim. Remember the right-wingers with their little, good shooting, Zim! So, philosophically, a question. What is the difference between Dinesh D'Souza referring to the President of the United States as grown-up Trayvon, a person who was killed in cold blood? What's the difference between that and the Christian American patriots saying we now have authority to, and you know the rest? My suggestion, of course, is that there is not just a hell of a lot of difference at all. Yeah, Marty, that bar rescue is exactly like Kitchen Nightmares, and yeah, there's a Gordon Ramsay type there who whips them into shape. Right. Let's go to the phones. By the way, the Skype line's open, too. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Bob Kincaid Horn. Here we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there. Did you say Dinesh D'Souza? Did what?
Dinesh D'Souza. He is a well-regarded right-wing intellectual in this country.
Oh, my God in heaven. That sounds like a drag queen's name.
You're off and running.
Well, I mean, you know, I could think of a better name for him. I'd call him Rotunda Cortez.
That works, too.
You know, when people label kids with names like that, no wonder the guy's messed up, because why don't they just, from birth, just hang a sign around the back of his neck saying, kick me?
Well, that probably explains him being a right-wing conservative.
Well, that's what I'm trying to, you know, that's the thing I'm trying to explain, I guess. I mean, Dinesh D'Souza, I can't even say it.
Well, think John Philip Sousa, only D'Souza, Dinesh D'Souza.
Dinesh D'Souza. I mean, some of these names that they have just really slay me, like Rince Priebus and stuff like that.
Yeah, you can't say Rince Priebus without at least a little chuckle.
No, you can't. And, of course, when you see the guy, it's not really a chuckle. It's just like, you know, ugh. But, you know, I was just listening to Mr. Tress. I wish you the very best in getting all this behind him. I know it's been a great deal
stress, annoyance.
Hell, yeah. Having to move and stuff like that, particularly, you know, when you're older. I mean, you know, when you're younger, moving is sort of like a experience into a better type of thing. But when you get older, it's not. And I think what he's gotten into basically is he's got somebody down there in his building who has a case of the ass for him, and they're just trying to get rid of him because he does not comply with what this manager or whoever this person who runs that place is
he does not fit in or go down and play backgammon or whatever with the other people. I mean, you know, Mr. Stress is an individual. He's been an individual all of his life. That of an individual. And I can understand this situation. I really can. Because people don't like other people who don't conform and who are different. And they fail to see the value of a nonconformity and the value of not being like everybody else, you know?
Yeah.
That whole story, ever since he surfaced it a couple weeks ago, has really pissed me off. And I'll tell you one thing, if I could get a hold of that manager where he lives on the phone, I guarantee you one thing, she would have to leave work.
Probably have a sick headache.
She'd have more than that. But anyway, that's just a bad thing. But, you know, he was going back over some of the things about, this thing about hygiene and what we're talking about. Hell, Bob, you know, I can remember when I was in school, and this is not before the Punic Wars, when there was a portion on the report card, you know, like talks too much, this, that, and the other, there was a space on there that graded you on hygiene.
Sure, yes, absolutely. It was on my grade card.
Right, and grooming and stuff like that, and, you know, that was something that was brought to, you know, a parent's immediate attention. And the fact that a teacher should be excoriated because of her attempts to bring that thing up to speed, and with no backing from the principal. Now, the principal has building autonomy, correct? He's supposed to.
Yeah.
Everything in that school devolves upon him. And, you know, that's not right. When a principal really refuses to back a teacher up on something like that, that is not right. That is just crazy. And the principal should not be a principal at all.
No, but I don't get this idea of, you know, I hate the weasel speak. You know, she should face consequences.
Well, that's just part of what they call active administratively, or being subjected to administrative action.
So somebody's going to put something nasty in her personnel file.
You got it, buddy. And try to get her transferred to a place that they can't fire her, to a place that's even less desirable where she is, and they're going to make it so difficult upon her that she's going to have to just quit and go to something else. I've seen it happen so many times, but, you know, when the supervisors and stuff like that, if they can't fire you, they will make things so bad, you know, that you will have to quit or want to quit, or coming to work every day is just a horror instead of a joy. And that just degrades a person's inability or ability to function. I mean, it's really a cruel way. It really is. I mean, it's better just to go ahead and fire them outright so they can go on to someplace that's better than to have the poor bastard hang on. But the trouble is, the job market's so bad, the teachers and stuff like that. I guess she has no other choice, or would have no other choice. That's not right.
No.
I would think if she belongs to any kind of union or representative group, or maybe the National Education Association or the local education association, would have some type of organization to defend her.
One would hope, but I didn't see any reference to it being a public school.
Well, you know, even in the public schools, the NEA, National Education Association, and the local state education association were basically management and labor in the same organization. So that'll tell you what kind of outcomes they produce, you know?
Right.
And of course it was mandated, and this is when I taught school, that everybody had to join those associations or come into the principal's office and tell him why you did not, because they wanted to have 100% participation. Because it made them look good in front of the administrative office. And this was in South Carolina back in the, half of 75, 80, something like that, before I got out of public school altogether. I said, to hell with this. You know, I'd rather go work at an H-bomb plant than continue with all this stuff. But, I mean, you know, it got to the point where, I don't know, teaching could be such a wonderful profession. But you got to have backing from your administrator. You got to have somebody to stand there and you know, and take your back. But they don't have that anymore. Because these clowns that they put up through the administrative ranks, it's the Peter principle, really, are the ones who can't teach in the classroom. So they put them in an administrative position because maybe he had known somebody or there's a family member. You know how that shit goes.
Sure.
So, I mean, you know, that's just so tired. It really is. And instead of, you know, being promoted to the position of being a principal or in the school district office or something like that, that is a sign of a person who can't cut it in the classroom. And you've got these idiots who can't cut it in the classroom up there dictating policy, holding meetings, taking teachers away from valuable class time and stuff like that just to prove their own miserable existence. Like, well, I'm doing a job. I'm going to hold this in-service meeting, or I'm going to hold this, that, and the other. And keeping you to all hours when a teacher is already ready, burdened by so much administrative work and labor.
Yeah, anybody who thinks that teaching is an eight-hour-a-day job has never been involved with
it. I'll tell you one thing right now, it's not. Good Lord. But, you know, I have good memories about teaching, too, and stuff like that. I really do. And pursuant to Dr. Stress talking about spit-shining shoes, I wish I had a dollar for every minute I spent trying to spit-shine shoes, okay?
Yeah, because you weren't getting paid in the first place.
No, particularly Cordovans. They were really particularly rough. And, you know, because you had all that oil in them and the Kiwi shoe polish. Oh, Lord have mercy. If I never see a thing of Kiwi shoe polish again, it'll
live. All your shoes are now suede, aren't they, Jim?
Yeah, really. I mean, and basically the proof of the pudding was that you had to hold that shoe up to, one of these fluorescent lights that had the, you know, the, gradients in it. And you could see each particular mark of the gradient above from the light. And, you know, it was just crazy. Thank God for CoreFam. And it sort of took care of all that stuff. But, you know, I don't know. But I can remember a lot of good times that I had teaching. And I don't know. I remember, because teachers didn't make a whole lot of money back in the 70s. They still don't even now. That it was necessary to teach summer school, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in my case, I taught night school. Adult basic education. That was three nights a week. And the other two nights, I went to Fort Jackson to the education center out there and gave tests and stuff like that. And that's how I got into federal service and got away from all that crap. But I'll tell you a funny story and get off here. I remember one time in Columbia, South Carolina, it was at H.C. Flora High School. I was teaching summer school, and I noticed when I came into the classroom, these kids were unusually quiet. And I said, mm-hmm. They were probably saying, well, here he comes. He's probably hungover or something like that. And this kid had gone to this joke shop called the Different Drummer Joke Shop and had bought a bottle of Morning Breeze.
Oh, God.
Hydrogen disulfide, which basically can turn a room within 5 seconds into a place where the entire Soviet army took a dump.
Or any army, for that matter. Or maybe it's worse with cabbage and potatoes. I don't know.
And spam. But nonetheless, you know, when that thing happened, and they were all laughing, and one guy in the back just said, "Oh, my God." And I said, "I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to go outside, and we're going to do this classroom al fresco. But I want the individual who left this present in this room, I want him to put it on my desk before we leave." Which he did. I didn't get on the kid. And I said, "You know, where in the hell did you get this stuff?" He said, "The different drummer joke shop." And I said, "Well, I'm going to confiscate it, okay?" So this is on a Friday, and some friends and I went to this bar.
See, I knew it was going to happen.
What?
I knew that you were going to confiscate it and then put it to work.
I did.
I know you did.
Went to this bar, a gay bar, and all these queens were in there carrying on, you know, this thing, this, that, and the other, carrying on just like crazy. And so I went to the bathroom and broke the cap on it and just trailed it along the edge of the bar. And we left, and I can guarantee you one thing. That place empties like a Chinese fire drill. And this friend of mine named Smitty said, "Oh, my God, some queen in there is just wearing some outrageous cologne."
I just like the idea of everybody look, because everybody looks at every, who did that?
Well,
because, you know, there's 5 or 10 seconds of everybody looking at everybody else and everybody else,
you know,
looking sheepish.
People are tied in these knots of conversation. The last words I heard before we went out on the street was, "Who's shit?" I'm sorry, I can't help but laugh. I still remember that and the looks on their faces. And actually, I didn't do that on my own initiative. I had this friend put me up to it, and he said, "I dare you, I dare you." And of course, you know,
Jim, come on, don't put it off on a dare.
Well, you know, truth or dare, we'll call it that. But nonetheless, you know, that's one thing that, you know, I just one of my recollections of crazy stuff and this, that, and the other. And one thing Mr. Stress, I think, talked about was, you know, things that happened to us in our youth when we sort of get creepy critters that we don't want because of our activities in the weekend or at night, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Well, that's just part of growing up. You know, it's a rite of passage, I guess. And I can remember my first experience with that, and I didn't know what the hell the things were. And so I was sitting in the living room, in the den with my dad, and my mother was in the kitchen, and I said, "You know, Dad, what are these things, these little..." He said, "Son, you got crabs." And of course, my mother came in there with a can of Raid and was fixing to chase me out of the house calling orchids. And he just said, "Son, you need to either get Blue Star or a bottle of A200. That'll do it for you." So, at 4:30 in the morning, because I was so ashamed, I went to the Taylor Street Pharmacy to buy a bottle of A200 to get rid of the creepy critters, right?
Yeah.
And guess who what I would see in there at 4:30 in the morning?
Do tell.
The most gossipy person I ever had the privilege to know. "Well, what are you doing in here at this hour of the morning?" And I just said, "This." So, you know, put it on the radio. So, I mean, you know, we all go through different stages in our life, and we all look back on these stages in our life when things have happened to us, and, you know, we get these things. It's no sin to have it, so I'm trying to say, but it is to keep it. And the same thing is in attendance with personal hygiene and that type of thing. You know, we all will encounter certain things in our life, and we have to, once having realized the problem, correct it.
Hopefully, yeah.
You know,
I think, but by the same token, Jim, where the school story is concerned, I think there is something very real about wondering what the status is of the children. You know, do they have a home? Do they have a bath? Do they have more than one set of clothes? I mean,
I can remember a lot of these kids, particularly black kids, that would come to school, and they smelled of wood smoke.
Because that's how the home was heated.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, they had dirty clothes. They weren't bathed. And what could you do?
Because because that was a culture that did not give a damn whether they were warm in winter or burned up in the summer or had running water.
And has evolved itself into, for example, the diminution by $5 billion of the SNAP program.
Right.
So it hadn't changed much at all.
Well, no, actually, Jim, I don't think that it has. I don't think it's a matter of it hasn't changed much. I want to kind of stop there and drill down a little bit. We made an effort to change it with Republicans and right wingers of all stripe kicking and screaming the whole way, until you wind up with Ronald Reagan in 1979 kicking off his campaign not too awfully far from where some civil rights workers were buried in an earthen dam in Mississippi, and giving speeches within a stone's throw of the headquarters of the Ku Klux Klan. Okay? And then he comes along and he starts making up these bullshit stories, and they were. There was no truth to them about... And we knew who he was. Everybody knew. Come on, the code, the dog whistling. And so, you know, we made strides. The war on poverty was not an abject failure.
No, it was not.
It was making strides. And because it was making strides, precisely because it was working, the Republicans and the various right-wingers had to tear it down. And we are seeing now is not so much a continuation of what you knew as a young man with children who had no access to heat that didn't come from burning wood and lack of clean running water. This is not a continuation of that. This is retrograde motion back to it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think I've used that word with you on this program before, retrograde.
Because that is the America that these Republicans dream of when they dream of their golden age, when everything is shot in black and white, and it's all you know, Beaver looking out the back glass of the Mercury.
Yeah, it sure is. That's for sure. And this fact that Hobby Lobby has now gotten into the Supreme Court with their situation, that's going to be a real barn burner. And, you know, it's just incredible. I can see why people would even say, you know, maybe an enlightened despot would be preferable to some of the stuff we got in there now, you know, because as far as I'm concerned, what we have up there in D.C. right now are despots who are not enlightened.
I think you can make that argument. But by the same token, the whole American governmental experiment, to the extent that it was not predicated on anything more than wealth and class and privilege in the first place, did have some sort of an underpinning of a notion that this country could be great. And at least, and you know, it's all mixed up in all kinds of hypocrisy, but the fact of the matter is Jefferson was talking about citizen farmers who would be literate, who would be involved in their communities, who would take part in government. And then Lincoln comes along and just sort of opens the door a crack to the notion that maybe, just maybe, everybody can be included in that. Well, everybody who's male. And then you get to the beginnings of the end of the 19th century and the beginnings of the 20th, and women want to kick the door open and say, yeah, everybody means us too.
Well, there was access to a higher level, and now it's like you said, it's going down. It is in definite retrograde motion.
And see, that's
and
why
that reaction is, these people are extremely reactionary.
That's why I think we at our peril characterize things like this Hobby Lobby business as somehow just a matter of reproductive rights, or just a matter of religious liberty. The fact of the matter is, it was, and there's a scene, and I don't know how much reality it reflects, but there's a scene in Steven Spielberg's Lincoln, which I'm sure you've seen by now.
Oh yeah.
Okay. You remember the scene where they're debating in the House of Representatives, and one of the members says, and he's speaking of the Tommy Lee Jones character, that man wants to give black men the vote. Next thing you know, they'll be wanting to let women vote. And it's not at black folks voting that the howl erupts. It's at women voting that the howl erupts.
Yeah, that was the first thing I heard. And then the second thing I thought about, what is that thing on his head?
Well, it didn't look much worse than Rand Paul's does. Now, come on.
Oh, I don't know. But the larger point here... I understand what you're saying. I certainly do.
But the larger point here is that with... And I don't want to diminish anybody's particular contribution to the larger struggle for real freedom, not the 29 kinds of breakfast cereal freedom that Dr. John talks about, but real freedom. I don't want to diminish anybody's contribution to it. But more than anything else, it is the rights of women that have the right wing in an absolute conniption.
Oh, I know. I have a friend who's very much right wing, and she's, whenever I talk to her, she's always asking me, well, what do you know about Hillary? And I said, nothing. And I said, you know, I don't care to know anything about Hillary. And basically, if...
Oh, but she knows plenty, doesn't she?
Oh, absolutely, and just trying to pick me for it. And I changed the subject, and I just said, you know. And I ended the conversation. I said, by the way, if I am able, I will vote for her, and I know you won't. So let's just, in the next conversation, not bring up, not Hillary, but Mrs. Clinton.
Yeah, because it's not like you're part of her book club.
Or Secretary of State Clinton, who has served this country quite well as First Lady and also as Secretary of State.
And a member of the United States Senate.
And a member of the United States Senate, exactly.
Well, at least she hasn't devolved down to referring to her as Hitlery yet.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
Oh, you will.
Well, listen, on that note, I'm gonna drop off and give somebody else the mic, but nonetheless, you know, I just thought I would share those things, particularly with Dr. with Mr. Stress. I wish he could get through this. It's a hell of a time for it to happen during the holidays and things of that nature.
Well, I know that it means a great deal to him to have your emotional support, and there are a lot of folks.
Well, I wish I could provide more for him, really, but you know, we live in pretty far.
Well, maybe if he decides that he gets well and truly and righteously pissed off at that building manager, he'll provide you the phone number.
I'd be glad to give that bitch a call, excuse me, and just let her know exactly what I think of her. And because I
see, after he's gone.
Right. I mean, I have seen people who, just because they don't like the way a person appears or what they perceive their background to be, or just the fact that they are a follower, these types of individuals who are in administrative positions whose shibboleth is lead, follow, or get out of the way. I have seen so much of that in my life, that's when I've just almost turned against it, really. And you can, and you know, we talked about my background, and I'm not going to go into it. But on that note, I'm going to let you talk to somebody else who can probably make a hell of a lot more sense than I'm making tonight.
Well, Jim, you done fine. You take care.
Well, listen here. If I don't talk to you again, I hope you have a happy Thanksgiving. And by the way, it was a shady lady, not Rupert, who gave me the most trouble.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Because the vet had gave me some atropine, which is good for that. And basically, it sort of knocks them out. Not her.
Oh, no, not her.
Mm-mm. She was...
And she weighs what?
7 pounds. Talk about 7 pounds of hell. My God. And I had, you know, these rubber dishwashing gloves that you put on. Forget it.
Were they like those frayed little things at the automatic brushless car wash after she was done with them?
They looked like that thing on... RuPaul's, or whatever her name is, or whatever his name is, Ron Paul's head.
Oh, Rand Paul's.
Rand Paul. I think, as a matter of fact, I'm going to.
Well, I kind of wish RuPaul would talk to Rand Paul about the thing on his head.
His office. I am going to call his office tomorrow, and I'll do it. And I am going to suggest that they tell their boss to get in contact with RuPaul.
I mean, she's family.
Exactly, and get some tips on grooming.
Here, here, Jim.
Good night.
Good night. Now, see, Rupert, being 29 pounds and all, is quietly comfortable in his power. Whereas, wow. You know, I don't even want to think about trying to bathe, because the little Siamese cat that wanders around here, no. She probably doesn't weigh 5 pounds. But, no baths. I don't need the spite. She can be spiteful, you know. But then again. Yeah, I know. So here we are at 11 minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday with, like I said, plenty of stuff to work with yet. And lines open 304-658-3333. Fundraising for the evening remains at nil. And that's kind of understandable. There's a big drain on a lot of budgets this time of year, and it is understandable. We'll probably finish November somewhere between $700 and $1,000 in the hole. So, yeah. If you want to try to take it down a notch, PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. Let's see. So, yeah, Dinesh D'Souza says that the President of the United States is a grown-up Trayvon. You know what? I'd like to think that Trayvon Martin might have grown up to be a mighty fine young man had George Zimmerman not intervened. I think it's pretty clear that George Zimmerman did not grow up to be a fine young man. And one can question what kind of a man Dinesh D'Souza grew up to be. I am thankful this week when I remember that America is big enough and great enough to survive grown-up Trayvon in the White House. Yeah, because what would it have been like if we were busy surviving grown-up Richie Rich in the White House, Dinesh? Huh? What, Edith? Oh, go to hell, Dinesh D'Souza. There's always one. But, you know, you got it, and I'm sure the Secret Service just does its job from one day to the next. So, how many threats do we have today, Bill? Jerry, looks like 622. And they're all isolated incidents, aren't they? Absolutely. You don't think it's got anything to do with all that right-wing hate out there? No, couldn't possibly. Right? Yeah. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Senator Jeremy.
Hey, I see the two bang-up jobs of 60 Minutes. I see Laura Logan and her immediate supervisor both be taking a leave of absence from their posts.
Why haven't they been fired?
No, from the article, which I think it came from Salon, it sounds like basically they're saying 60 Minutes is in a clean house, and this is the first step before they're fired. I mean, I forget what the first story she messed up real bad on, but when she brought in that clown about Benghazi, who was never actually there, and lied to the FBI about being there or not, I got the whole story confused, because all I know is someone lied about something and made it to 60 Minutes and just baffled and blew the story way out of proportion from what really happened.
It's typical right-wingery. They get a right-winger gets a paper cut, and suddenly he wants the Congressional Medal of Honor. So this guy, depending on which way you want to view the story, submitted tons of paperwork saying, yep, stayed away, wasn't anywhere near the compound, didn't do anything, followed orders, yep, absolutely, that's me, I follow orders. And then turns around and writes a pseudonymous post in which he claims, I was there and I saw the bleeding bodies, blah, 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 blah. and CBS jumps on it and runs with it. And by CBS, I mean Laura Logan. And the way you're supposed to view this, or the way we were supposed to take it, was that, well, you know, that's just because of the evil bureaucracy of that one in our White House, and consequently, now his conscience has overcome him, and he's telling us the real truth of what happened on that fateful night in Benghazi, right?
Yeah. Now, this happened on 60 Minutes. This will probably scare the living hell out of a lot of people if they didn't know this. Laura Logan is actually also, she's not taking leave absence from CBS, just 60 Minutes, but she's also the head of international affairs at CBS.
Yeah. From which she's not taking a leave of absence?
No, she's just taking a leave of absence for 60 Minutes, from what I understood.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. See, I think she should be canned, and by canned, I mean, go accept the standing offer at Fox.
Well, of course, yes. If she did that, she would immediately become the newest, well...
And then at Fox, they could redo the whole 60 Minutes Benghazi piece, hold this guy up as a national hero, and the Fox crowd doesn't even know about the CBS... Well, you know, liberal media. You know, Bernie Goldberg can be trotted out with a mouthful of oatmeal to... liberal media suppressed the reality of Benghazi and that traitorous in the White House. And the nonagenarians in the Fox audience will go, absolutely.
She would fit right in with their news models over there, because let's face it, she's not a bad-looking lady.
No, she's not. But the fact of the matter is, she at one point had credentials, you know, credence as a journalist.
Right.
And went through hell in Egypt, did she not?
Yes.
And that bought a lot of goodwill. And then she squandered it on Benghazi. But the thing is, when you do a story like this, the cover is off and you are immediately outed as a right-winger. That woman is not an independent or neutral journalist. She is an agenda pusher. And the Benghazi story proves it. She has no credit. I hope the folks at CBS will figure out. She has no credibility left. Everything, if she reports from an ice cream stand in the middle of Santa's Village at Christmas time in a mall in Dubuque, she is going to have no credibility with anybody who pays attention to journalism.
I hope so, because she took some of those... this guy in particular that she had on, he took all of their faulty statements that they take and balled them up and threw them across the national airwaves. I mean, this faulty outrage, and yes, I give it due diligence that what happened in Benghazi is a sad thing. We lost some people, unfortunately, depending on who you believe, terrorists or a group of people did a horrible thing and some people died. It was four people.
Yeah, but consider this. Nobody died, and the story had validity, and Dan Rather got fired. Why has she not been? And I have Kathy to thank for that in the chat room. But that's the truth. And the answer is I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. You can lie like a rug.
Right, and what Dan Rather reported on was factually true. He did go on an leave of absence AWOL without notifying anybody to avoid Vietnam.
There you go. But here's another question. Is her leave of absence paid?
Hers will be, yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure of it.
Yeah, see, Dan Rather just got fired.
Right, he got fired, and you rarely hear from him now. I mean, occasionally... he'll pop up on Rachel Maddow, but that's about all you ever see of him anymore.
You know, Isaac has a valid question here via Twitter. Are we now supposed to believe that she was raped in Egypt? And that seems really, really cold. But once one's credibility has been impeached, by the way, a neologism coming in from Irish Dave. Word of the day, poutrage. P-O-U-T-R-A-G-E, poutrage. So she just look. This is what Fox News exists for. Rupert, Agent Fred, tell Rupert. Rupert, offer her a job so she can leave CBS because you know you want her on your team. And she can sit there next to the guy with the porn stash. Not Geraldo. The other guy with the porn stash. Come on, I'm lost.
Geraldo's taking a hit too.
Yeah, but who's the other? This is the guy who likes to dress up like a homeless person and go out and collect money from New Yorkers and then report back how homeless people are raking in a fortune. Come on, his porn stash is bigger than Geraldo's.
It wouldn't be Bill O'Reilly. He attacks people with umbrellas. Honestly, don't know. I don't watch Wolf Blitzer. No, it's CNN. Close enough, though.
Okay, I'll get some help here in a minute. Somebody will email me. But yeah, he just recently got noted for heroically going out on the streets of New York and proving that New Yorkers are actually good to people who look like they're in need.
Yeah, are you talking about the guy who's a CEO and does this yearly?
No, yeah, I think he does it yearly, but no, he's not a CEO. He works for Fox. I mean, he's a right-winger. He's a libertarian. He's a... John Stossel. Thank you, Darlene. Yeah.
Okay, because somewhere they reported him as being a CEO and that he goes out yearly dressed up normally as a normal person but claiming he's homeless, basically to show their plight, but at the same point, the next day he forgets about them.
No, this is just a shtick that he does for Fox. And Laura Logan will fit in perfectly there. Now, she won't have any credibility in the rest of the larger journalism world, but then again, we're talking about the for-profit media, so what is she losing?
This whole situation I find just strange because, I mean, we went through 9/11. 3,000 people plus our troops in all different countries have died for this. And not to mention the people we've killed in retaliation that are perfectly innocent. But four people died during said president's reign, and the world is coming apart, and it's a huge scandal, and oh my God, they left them there to die. Even though they have repeatedly mentioned that the closest strike eagles were hours and a half away, so by the time they even got there, nothing would have been vanilla to be changed.
Right. And then there's the larger question of why were we farming out security to private contractors in the first place? And while that happened on Obama's watch, it was a policy that was not begun during President Obama's administration.
Not to mention, they also are saying now, in a lot of different places, depending where you look, and some probably more notable sources, have mentioned that they're pretty sure that the CIA black site was actually a torture site. So there's a reason why it was attacked. People knew what it was openly in the area.
Now, I hadn't seen that, but it makes a sad degree of sense.
I've heard that in a couple of different places. I think it was a Blackwater or a CIA torture site, and that's partly why terrorists, Al-Qaeda, whatever this group rose up against it, basically to free their people that were stuck in it.
Oh, and we have the winning John Stossel reference of the night coming from Jim, Jeremy. What an ass. He looks like a young Stalin. Ugh.
I'll have to do a Google search on him because I can't even place this ass hat myself.
You won't soon for... Well, I soon forgot him, but I'm lucky that way. But...
Well, then again, I may have seen him and forgotten because I disregard everything I see on Fox. I don't care who it is. So I hear it goes in one ear and out the next.
Right. Fox, you know, if I just blow past there and stop even for a second... I don't even hear English on Fox anymore. I just hear a series of clicks and grunts and squeaks and little forest animal noises.
When I go to Fox, I mute it, and I like to think about what they're talking about, and I usually think of terror this, terror that, black people are coming to get you, and I'm usually somewhat right about it.
Yeah.
That's usually what half of their shows are about. Now, to switch subjects completely, tonight I got a rerun of Dr. Bill.
Dr. Bill was a rerun today.
Okay, well, ironically, both days I haven't been able to get anything but the last, say, 15, 20 minutes. And each time I've tuned in the last 2 days,
Well, just go grab. Are you in the Horn Dropbox?
I was, but I lost the address to it.
Okay, I need to shoot you that. I need to shoot you that again. But it all goes up over at White Rose Society.
Right. No. I know. I just haven't had a chance to listen to it other than what's streamed here at night because I work at night, so I sleep during the day.
Sure.
But anyway, the last two times I've tuned in, which is the last 15, maybe 20 minutes at the most, I've always tuned in right when he's speaking about the guy who wrote the paper about our dear friend Glenn Beck and how he is the king of fear propaganda. And he so nails that guy by saying that, that it is over the top good.
Actually, it's not a paper. It's I think it was a full-on book, and it's from 1968. It's called The Paranoid Style in American Politics. And so I guess we could say that this guy was kind of a Nostradamus. Here, let me look up his name. I'll recognize I'll recognize his name. I'm thinking, yep, Richard Hofstadter. It is an essay. November 1964.
Yeah, with these paranoid broadcasters, there's always a grain of truth in what they're saying. So a lot of times you have to say, well, yeah, but that's true. So they expand on it and make it 10 times worse than it has to be.
And by the way, you can read the essay itself. Apparently, it is still online at harpers.org. Maybe it bears just a straight up. Well, it's seven online pages. And so he's writing within a year of the assassination of John Kennedy, and of course he had seen the proliferation of the John Birchers, and remember Daddy Koch provided the seed money for them. But the thing is, just as I was talking with Jim, Jeremy, and noted that our approaches to poverty in this country had become cyclical and were now in retrograde motion, so too can be the same be said for right-wing politics. This essay comes out not just a year after the Kennedy assassination, but it also comes out contemporaneously with the beatdown of Barry Goldwater in 1964, which was the absolute low point of Republican politics that fires and energizes them to the point that there. You can argue that the line from John Boehner to Barry Goldwater and the Republican right's rise is unbroken, and it all hinges on this. Fulminating paranoia that somebody, you know, them, they, the other, are out to destroy Merca.
And for them, that'd be the liberals.
Liberals, progressives, commies, pinkos, the bra-burning feminists, the gays, and fifth columnist sympathizers with any of them. Everybody that's not a right winger, and of course that leaves them the room to then say, we are the repository of true salvation. We have the only way to save us from our imminent doom.
That's true. That kind of goes with the whole saying of America will never be destroyed from the outside; it will be done from within, which currently is being done by the Tea Party. They're our biggest enemy.
Right.
We burn down all the walls around them, basically.
Right, and you know we take these little stories like the story out of Buffalo, New York, in the kindergarten, or the story of a guy who gets the back of his head blown off in a bar in Nashville because he lit a cigarette, or the story of the guy whose house was allowed to burn down by the fire department, or the roads that were returned from pavement to gravel. Or the city that can't pay to have its trash picked up anymore. All of these little stories add up to a larger reality. And that is an America in deep, deep trouble. I couldn't help noticing a story today out of the LA Times And you know, I get positively misty-eyed about the idea of rail travel. Really, you know, European or Asian quality rail travel in this country. And naturally, you know, one of the big deals was that there was going to be a bullet train that was going to run from San Francisco to Los Angeles. And that's one of those what a wonderful world it will be kind of things if you just look at it on its surface. Headline today, Jeremy, Sacramento judge's ruling throws bullet train's future in doubt. And of course, and there are references in there to people who are fighting tooth and toenail to keep the bullet train from ever happening. And as someone on the ground in an area that is afflicted with industrial overreach and you know, wild capitalism gone wild, you know, I want to learn all I can to find out why don't these people want this train to run from San Francisco to Los Angeles. But there's something inside me that says, NIMBY maybe. Because they're going to, what?
You know, as the rest of the world advances, America slips further and further back towards being monkeys again. Because we don't want to spend the money on our infrastructure. We don't want to improve things. I mean, there's grandiose dreams of having, I heard this not too long ago, underwater, basically it's a mag rail train from here to Paris. And I think it was from New York City's harbors to Paris. And they said it would take, I think, 3 hours to get there. No, I'm sorry. Maybe it was England. I'm sorry. It couldn't have been Paris. It was England because it was right basically on the coast. But that was the plan. But they're not going to do it because it'll cost too much money and we can't afford it. And it was almost guaranteed to be safer than traveling by any other means.
Yeah, and see, I saw another rail story back at the weekend, and I saw it over at Think Progress. Apparently, the Japanese are willing to build a significant leg of one of their maglev trains. And if he's out there listening, Brother Albert's going, ooh, maglev train. Because I'm going, ooh, maglev train. And it's going to run from BWI to D.C., and eventually the plan is for the whole thing to run all the way, I think, to either New York or Boston. And the piece I saw at Think Progress said, this is a disaster for America. Because these private, you know, this privately funded rail will serve only the elite, only the privileged, and it will at the same time starve the Acela train, which runs from D.C. to New York, of much-needed ridership, because the Acela train, in turn, keeps Amtrak tottering along as best it possibly may in the service that is extended to the rest of the country, that apparently the article made it sound like no one rides. And as someone who has taken Amtrak from Thurmond, West Virginia, to Chicago, I can tell you it is no party.
No, I'm taking Amtrak from here to Boston, and that's no party. And it leaves my home city and goes through all the little small towns here and there, up through the mountains, down to the valleys. It's no fun. It's slightly better than taking a Greyhound bus. And I'll branch off for a second. When I was discharged from the military, which I spoke of briefly a few weeks back, I was discharged from Great Lakes Naval Training Center in February. It was Valentine's Day of all days, so it was ironic to me. In t-shirts and a short. T-shirts and a pair of shorts. It was negative 14 that day. I walked from the training center to a bus, and then a bus terminal let me off where I was going to go meet the Greyhound terminal. It was a whole different system. I believe it was a military bus that brought us to this staging station. Well, anyway, it took me 4 days to get home from Chicago to Burlington because of all the stops and layovers by bus.
Well, in my case, we left Thurmond, West Virginia, and we're supposed to be in Chicago at 10:30. We got there at 3:30. It was an overnight trip, and it was a living hell. The sleeper car, it was as if the springs didn't work on it. And it was just awful. Just truly awful. And, you know, I'm a believer in rail travel. And my first I looked at the thing. I said, really? Okay. So that would mean you wouldn't, you know, just on principle, if I was in D.C., I would rather fly out of BWI simply so as not to have to look at that disgusting statue of Ronald Reagan that sits in front of National Airport. But according, you know, according to the progressives who know better, it's a bad idea for a maglev train to be built in the United States. And I don't know what the answer is.
Okay. My grandfather, for all of his life, other than the time he spent in the service during World War II, he worked for the Union Pacific. They were up here in Vermont, too. Shortly after he retired, I think it was probably mid-70s, probably maybe as late as 80. I wouldn't know. I was born in 80. They packed up ship and left. They were a large job supplier on the East Coast around here. So he was a strong train person, was his whole life to his dying day. But unfortunately, in case of the trains, they decided somewhere along the point it was cheaper to put stuff in these big, huge trucks and drive them down the main road with everyone else. So that's where trains went.
Yeah.
I mean, you have some of these private corporations like CRX coming back, but they're private organizations.
And, I mean, I'd love to know from people out in California, you know, do you want a high-speed train that runs between San Francisco and L.A.? Does it beat flying? Would it be more pleasant? Would it be more efficient? Would it be less fuel intensive? I'm not asking this rhetorically. I don't know the answers to that. I know that flying is no longer a pleasant activity. And it has nothing to do with smoking. It has to do with all the paranoia and the crappy little airliners that, you know, where you sit with your knees bunched up against your chin if you're more than 5'2".
I know about that. I'm 6'2", so yeah.
No, so am I.
I
mean, that's why every time I get on a CRJ-200, I look at whoever's sitting next to me and say, hey, great, another day at Air Keebler.
Yeah. I'll give you one quick funny fly story, then I'll let someone else take over. It's not about me personally. It's actually about my grandfather. Like I said, back then, World War II, he was in the service. Fortunately, in his case, or the rest of my family, no one ever gets shipped overseas for World War II. But anyway, he was a person on an airplane with other people. I forget what his job was exactly, but back in those days, you didn't have fly-by-wire or computer-controlled planes, but it was commonplace for, say, the pilot and the co-pilot to go sleep in the back of the plane for a few minutes while someone up front took the control. Well, basically, my grandfather watched for several days, maybe a couple of months, while they were doing this. And at one point, the pilot said, hey, I want to go take a nap. You just take the controls, Bill. All I have to do is hold the stick and hold it straight. Don't go up or down. Just stay about this level. Well, they did. He didn't change a darn thing for, I think, 2.5 hours worth of this guy sleeping because they had to get somewhere. Well, when they got to where they're supposed to be, the pilot woke up and realized they were 300 miles off course because of the draft of the wind.
Wow.
And in those days, they kind of laughed it off. I mean, nothing bad happened, but basically because of the pushing of the wind and not knowing how to compensate, the pain basically just went with the airflow. But with that, I'll let you go and let someone talk. You're getting shorter on time.
All right. Jeremy, you have yourself a good evening, and we will talk soon, I hope.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If I don't hear from you again, have a good Thanksgiving.
You too. You too, by all means. Take care.
Yeah.
Bye. Jeremy calling from Vermont. Irish Day with a question. My eternal question is, can any nation call itself civilized that lacks a comprehensive, affordable rail passenger system? He continues, of course, back in the day, my daddy, a longtime employee of Union Pacific, had a pass, and rail travel was outstanding. And hey, thanks very much to Jay, and thanks very much to Sal. They are the only ones who have tried to keep things going this evening, and it is much appreciated. Of the average $150 we try to raise on any given evening, thanks to Jay and Sal, we're at $55. Thank you. Oh, by the way, a little reminder about Dinesh D'Souza. You know, the guy who referred to President Obama as grown-up Trayvon. Not exactly sure. Well, this email says, don't forget, Dinesh is the guy who originally got Bill Maher kicked off ABC's Politically Incorrect. Now, of course, William Donahue is going after Bill Maher at HBO. Hopefully they will tell. I mean, you know, they get the occasional issue with Bill Maher, but hopefully they'll tell William Donahue to go piss up a rope. And then this, a reminder from the past, T-Bog, who does a magnificent blog that I often read over at Raw Story, said, Dinesh D'Souza, who was something vaguely interesting or of marginal importance at one time or another, and then managed to parlay that into a gig at... Yeah, because, see, grown up, yeah, T-Bog remembers, managed to parlay that into a gig at Fakey Christian College housed in an abandoned Manhattan skyscraper until he got shit-canned for boning the help. Was twittering along today, and that's when it... Yeah, this is the guy who refers to the President of the United States as grown-up Trayvon. Thanks, Irish Dave. Irish Dave says he's getting something in the mail. Sorry I effed it up. My alms will go in the snail mail tomorrow, this time with a street address. Who knew? 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. Thank you, Dave. Thank you very much. So, I don't know. I really would like to know more about the rail project, and because that San Francisco to LA, that sounds like a beautiful ride, among other things. And according to Ralph Vartabedian at the LA Times, in a major legal blow to the California bullet train, a Sacramento judge ruled that state officials cannot pursue their plan to tap billions of dollars in voter-approved bond funding for construction, a decision that could cause indefinite delays in the massive $68 billion project. Superior Court Judge Michael Kenney held on Monday that essentially the state's papers were not in order. He said they'd made key errors and failed to comply with legal requirements as they moved the project toward a long-awaited groundbreaking. And according to the article, throws the whole project into doubt, although it did not stop it outright. Kenney's rulings mean that for the immediate future, officials won't have access to nearly $9 billion in high-speed rail bonds authorized by voters in 2008. Two citizens of Kings County are, and the county itself are suing to stop the train. Stuart Flashman is the lawyer for them. The state should step back from this project and realize it made some bad political decisions. Maybe we are not building the right high-speed rail project. If you were the captain of the Titanic, would you order full speed ahead after hitting an iceberg? Well, thanks for making light of the deaths of God knows how many people in April 1912, Lawyer Flashman. Why is it not the right rail project? What does he think the right rail project is? Where does he want it built? Because when a lawyer says there's somewhere better to build it or suggests there's somewhere better to build it, you can bet he owns some land along the way. So because of this ruling by Judge Kenney, the High-Speed Rail Authority in the state of California will have to rescind, according to the LA Times article, a 2011 funding plan and create an entirely new one from the ground up. Because, according to Judge Kenney, they haven't found the money to finish, completely finish the first phase of the project. You know how we were talking about the paranoid style in American politics? Maybe I've got a little bit of that myself. Because somehow or another, I smell airline fuel here. And I smell gasoline. And I smell highway construction money. Because, you know, California has no traffic problems. Why would you want a high-speed railroad between San Francisco and L.A. that stops in Fresno? Or do I have it completely wrong? And California doesn't need high-speed rail. Isn't it ironic that on the one hand, you've got the Scott Walkers and the John Kasichs and the Chris Christies and the Rick Scotts of the world who say, well, we don't want any of that one's high-speed rail, but we'd like the money he was going to spend. Can we keep it? And the Obama administration goes, what, are you crazy? No. And California says, we'd love some high-speed rail money. We got this great idea, San Francisco to L.A. And we go, okay, great. And a guy in a black robe says, sorry. Bullet and a one-sentence paragraph, and these things make me a little bit leery. Bullet train opponents said Kenney's ruling highlighted the project's flawed management. See, and this is where the paranoid style of American politics comes in, because the next quote is, the state rail agency, quote, has failed at every turn to detail a realistic plan that will fund this program, unquote, said Representative Kevin McCarthy, R. Bakersfield. That's R, as in Repiglickin, Bakersfield. With no private funds, unreliable ridership numbers, and unreliable ridership numbers? What makes them unreliable? Are numbers no longer reliable? God, don't you love it when Republicans talk? And the reliance on taxpayers to eventually bail the project out, it should not move forward. My colleagues and I will continue our efforts to deny any federal funds going forward toward this unworkable boondoggle in the future. Future, 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 future. You know, a future that includes nothing but hydrocarbon-based fuel forms, nothing but automobiles on overly clogged highways, nothing but nasty-ass little aircraft running between paranoid little airports. Or, for that matter, paranoid great big airports. Okay, I understand that. Thank you, Duncan. Bob, you have to build it up through the valley because of the coast range. Well, I bet that drives costs up a little bit, doesn't it? Michael Brady, oh, my nose, is a Bay Area attorney who represented the parties in the challenges ruled on by Judge Kennedy. He said Monday's ruling could be a fatal stumbling block that the state can never satisfy. Because it'll be a great day
It'll be a great day in California, eh? When they can stop that communist bullet train. And why is it the people can't fund a damn train if they decide they want one? Well, I guess for the same reason that women can't have contraception if the Congress they elected passes a health care provision that makes sure they can have it. Because the sweet and delicate souls of the Christian corporations know better. Like I said to Jim, a lot of this goes all the way back to the absolute terror that empowered women present to fearful males. Unreliable ridership numbers. Well, yeah, those unreliable people will be riding the train. Get on, they'll get off. They'll ride the train unreliably. Next thing you know, they'll be wanting to sit up in first class with, you know, you can't, when the hoi polloi is trying to sit up there, you know, where their betters are. Well, can't have that. Jesus. How do they do it in other countries? How is it that there are magnificent trains that run all over Japan that even the worst of the trains running through Germany are awfully damn nice trains? And better than Amtrak by a factor of what the... Are you kidding? Yeah. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Bob. In 1977, Bob, I was leaving Okinawa and had to fly to mainland Japan, and we had a little layover there. So they said, just so long as you guys make it back to the airport, you can walk around here. So it was nighttime. I was walking with a Marine in civilian clothes and getting ready to head back to, I don't know if we were at Yokosuka. I'd have to double check to see where I was at. But in any case, he grabbed my left arm and said, hey, look out. And I looked at him, and then I looked back to my right, and it was a Japanese high-speed train taking off. And it was gone in a flash, and you don't hear it. And I think I would have had about 33 years in the Marine Corps by now, if my math, maybe a little more. So the observation about California and the high-speed rail, for folks that haven't been out to California lately, but they have a very nice train that runs right along the coast right now. It is very quiet, it's very efficient, and it's pretty quick, and it would be about probably half the speed of the high speed rail. But apparently the high speed rail in California is to be built primarily near it or next to it or something. But
Well, Duncan just explained it all to me via the chat on Skype. Basically, it runs through the valley, and as Duncan explained it to me, the valley is where all the Rapig Lickens live.
Well, I would go with your instincts on the fuel that you were smelling, because if you have a vehicle that can travel as fast as a jet, I think you would have competition, and that's part of the idea behind it driving down. It would actually the Republicans always talk about a free market and all their other nonsense propagandistic language, but it would be competition. And
right, and, you know, the free market, it's another one of those things, Mark, that they were for it before they were against it.
That's right. And I was walking out of a store a couple of days ago, and I thought I overheard somebody say something about Benghazi. And in any case, I said, did you guys hear that about Benghazi? And they said, no, and I said, Was that an embassy that was attacked? And they said, yeah, it was an American embassy attack in Benghazi. I said, well, I said, you ever been in a conversation with a person that's actually worked at an American embassy? And the lady and her husband said, no. And I said, well, you are now. And I said, wasn't a consulate, wasn't an embassy. Those are officially recognized locations that we have even in our own country. All countries primarily do. Miami's got some. Tampa's got some consulates. And when you go to work, in another country in any capacity for the United States government or her assisting agencies, you are registered with that government, and they're knowledgeable of your existence. So we have, you know, so I don't know, it's so much propaganda, but it was a villa where Stevens was staying, regardless of what they were involved with, and the so-called trainers in Tripoli, you know, of course, trainers are special forces, and of course they can become combatants at will, but they're not a fighting unit. And I did explain that to the people I was speaking to. I said they're individually very, very proficient at what they do, but they're not an organized military unit. And I said, also, if you're going to confront 130 attackers, you want to outnumber your enemy, usually 2-1, if not 3-1. And I said, and we didn't have that kind of manpower. Regardless, to load helicopters with fuel and water and ammunition, to have the people that you know, it wasn't even plausible. And the speaking of trains going 200 miles an hour, the fastest CH-53 and Sikorsky 46, they would be gladly go close to 200 miles an hour. So they're loaded down with extra fuel, ammunition, food, and men that are armed for combat. You're talking about I don't know how many helicopters you'd be talking. I haven't crunched the numbers, but you know, well over. Maybe you're looking at 20.
Yeah, it sounds like a scene out of Apocalypse Now.
It would be more similar to that, and of course the Marine choppers hold 18 to 20 some people depending and their gear. So figure 20 people per chopper, and you want to outnumber 150 man force. You're talking about 20 helicopters loading up and traveling 300 miles or whatever the distance. It's like 250 miles from.
Yeah, the whole thing is just a ginned up bunch of baloney by people who don't know from Shinola. Is that the Reader's Digest condensed version?
Yeah, and Paul Harvey would still endorse it. He was a right wing Republican. Yeah, that's where just from a grunt standpoint, the mathematics isn't there, the manpower isn't there, the authority is not there either. To take a soldier, an American soldier, and dispatch him to free civil soil in a circumstance that are a non-declared combatant is a violation of laws internationally recognized. You're really declaring an attack as a low-degree level of war. And then if the mission failed, which it would have been even a larger catastrophe. President Carter rehearsed for over a year. I want to say it was close to a year and a half for the Iran rescue thing. They built a mock compound to scale, and they had doors. I served with a Marine that was a hostage in Iran, and he shared some of the debriefing information. It was very detailed. The types of locks, photographs of people. It was very extensive. They wouldn't let him leave Washington D.C. And he ends up choosing to come to Argentina, where I met him, Wesley Williams. And I also served with Eddie Falcon, who was also a hostage, an American Indian, but that had the fastest running score at Marine Security Guard School in Henderson Hall, Washington, D.C., out of our whole company there. They were both hostages, and they were released early for propaganda reasons because they were Marines of color. There's so many questions, but, yeah, it's just bullshit, and the average American doesn't even know what a consulate is or an embassy. They don't know. They don't even know what an embassy is. It's just sad.
But they don't need to know that kind of stuff, you know. Hey, Mark, I got to get out of here. Thanks for the input, and thanks for the expansion on the details. I appreciate it.
Well, you're always educating me. I'm just chiming in with your. Thank you, Bob. You're welcome.
Have a good evening, our buddy Mark. Time to get out of here. Again, thanks to Jay, and thanks to Sal for helping out this evening. It was rain on parched earth, unlike what's outside. Thank you very kindly. Time to get out of here. Rick Smith is on the way. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go, you with your ideas, your thoughts, your communications, your kind contributions. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch. And thanks always, Gina and Judy. Thank you.
Catch you tomorrow. Here comes Rick Smith.